Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hello, I'm Rob.
And I'm Rob.
And welcome to Impossible Mission. Let's get into this week's edition. And we're going to kind of get into the heat of the moment, really. Just everybody in the internet has gone a bit nuts after the fact that Microsoft splurged £7.5 billion on ZeniMax, who own Bethesda.
Well, not just Bethesda. They own Obsidian and various others as well.
No, they don't own Obsidian. They already owned Obsidian, but Bethesda, yeah. ZeniMax own Bethesda, Machine Games, Arkane.
Oh, that's it. Sorry, yeah. Arkane was the one I was
thinking. Others and others and others. I can't remember them off the top of my head. There's quite a few. But yes, they've landed themselves quite a kitty there. They're going to honour the two titles that they already have coming out on PlayStation 2. So Ghostwire Tokyo and Deathloop will be coming out on PlayStation as per already arranged.
Yeah.
But it's had a lot of these websites and YouTube presences all ask the same question. Who are Microsoft buying next?
Who's next? Yeah, the thing is, the internet, right? And I've seen all the videos and I've seen all the speculation, and we've got to start off with the one that's currently raging across the internet because of all the speculation, because apparently a controller happens to be the same color as a certain hedgehog. And, you know, the words Still Iconic have an S and an onic in the words Still Iconic. So somehow that is, you know, conspiracy theorists in the games world are going, oh, Microsoft are going to buy Sega, even though Microsoft have said, we're not buying Sega. Phil Spencer did say.
At this moment.
Phil Spencer did say last year that he wanted to buy a Japanese game developer, right? He did say that.
We're jumping ahead. The thing is, that was sort of, people are deconstructing the comments of social media and PR. And yes. If anything that's happened this year with Microsoft, it's the established fact that Microsoft PR is kind of amazing. It had that bit recently. It says, how do you upgrade your game from Xbox One to Xbox Series X? Just buy the game. And it's got that Leonardo DiCaprio, Django Unchained, goofy-faced smile meme.
See, this is the thing, right? Microsoft...
They know what they're doing.
Do you remember that year at E3, where when the Xbox One was basically announced, and they had all the palaver with the Xbox One, and Sony did great at that E3 with their marketing, because they were talking about how to... You know, how to pass a game on to your friend, and he just took the disc and gave it to his friend. Yeah?
Yeah.
And there was all that. Xbox, you know, Microsoft have learned from all that. And this year, I've been amazed at their marketing strategy, because it's very direct and really rather transparent. And I'm
honestly, it's the very opposite of what Sony have become.
Yeah.
Kind of complacent. But that's another topic for another day. What we're talking about today is, like, potential companies that Microsoft could also buy. And... by extension, Sony, but we've got to remember the fact that Microsoft just spent more money than the PlayStation 4 has operating profit.
Yeah.
See, they've got big Willy-style money they're throwing around here.
Okay, I just want to put the Sega thing to rest, okay, before we go any further, because we do have other developers we're going to look at. But the Sega thing, I can kind of understand, okay? Sega and Microsoft have had a relationship, a long-standing, very good relationship for a couple of decades now. The operating system for the Dreamcast was Windows CE. When the Dreamcast failed, if you look at the Xbox, the controller for the Xbox, the whole design of the Xbox, the layout of the ports, everything like that, very reminiscent of the Dreamcast. You had games like Jet Set Radio and Shenmue 2 coming out just on the Xbox. You had the Dreamcast Collection coming out on the Xbox 360. You have all this long-running, you know, good relationship between Sega and Microsoft. And going forward, I can see a collaborative future for the two, right? I don't know if Microsoft will buy Sega.
Well, to be honest, with the Bethesda deal, I don't think it's as outright as we've bought them. So everything that we've bought is now ours exclusively.
Exactly.
Microsoft, the wording of Todd Howard and the wording of Phil Spencer have suggested that they're basically going to be a bit spread their product all over the place and put it out where it best suits it.
And they're going to sell their gaming odds.
Well, I was kind of picturing it as the guy who with a coat and Resident Evil sort of opens his coat.
Oh, no. Oh, my brain's just got to a horrible, horrible, horrible place.
But anyway, we're kind of getting away from the point. Let's crack down. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 potential things that Microsoft could be interested in.
Yeah. Just closing the book on Sega before we go further. Just closing the book. This is the final bit. I do think that Microsoft will make games with Sega going forward, and some of those may be exclusives. Yakuza, Like a Dragon, that coming out on Xbox is one of the things that I'm thinking of with regards to that.
It's also coming out on PlayStation 2, but PlayStation haven't really been very good at promoting it.
Exactly. I mean, and it's a timed exclusive, isn't it, on the Xbox?
On the Xbox Series X, yes.
Yeah. And so I think going forward, there will be more things like that between Microsoft and Sega.
Okay, it's a next-gen exclusive to Microsoft. Yeah. It's coming out on PlayStation 4 same time, but yeah.
Yeah. But I think that, see, going back to Phil Spencer wanting to buy a Japanese game developer, I wouldn't have put Sega at the top of the list.
No, I mean, the other elephant in the room we've got to address is from the Sony side of things, because people have basically been saying, okay, right, we've got this out of the way. We've got Bethesda. There's kind of a spiritual link there between Bethesda and Microsoft, because it all goes back to PC gaming, and Morrowind, was it? Was on the Xbox, which really got them going, Oblivion especially.
Well, it wasn't just Morrowind. It was the early Elder Scrolls games up to Morrowind as well.
But my point is, there's a connection there, is it?
Yeah.
Between Microsoft and Bethesda, there is a link there. It's not weird, like them buying something completely unrelated that they've never had any sort of business or relationship with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
By the same token, Sony and Konami, with these rumours swirling of this fabled Metal Gear Solid remake and the Silent Hill, is it or isn't it a game, or is or isn't it an exclusive to Sony with Silent Hill, So there is history between Sony and Konami in the same way as there is between Microsoft and Bethesda. But I think the problem with that idea, and people have been talking about the potential buying or leasing or licensing of all these things, is Konami know they're wanted.
Yeah.
When you know you're wanted, you won't put out for anybody.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually perfect wording, right? It's actually perfect wording, because of all the Japanese developers, of all the Japanese studios, I would have put Konami at the top of the purchase list above Sega. I would have said Konami would have been the target, since they've effectively pulled out of the video games world until recently. You know, they were concentrating on pachinko machines and stuff like that.
Well, they've got like Pez, and that's about it, really.
Yeah.
That they're putting effort into, at least, I mean.
Yeah. But I mean, from my perspective, I was looking at the whole Konami thing as kind of a THQ situation, where it's just waiting for somebody to come in and buy up all the IPs.
Well, THQ actually went under, didn't they?
Yeah.
So somebody picked up all the licenses, and the company was born anew as THQ Nordic.
Yeah.
Not all the licenses. I mean, they got Darksiders, maybe got a few other things, but they've been kind of quiet.
Yeah.
Recently, THQ Nordic.
But Konami have some amazing IPs in their catalogue, you know?
But we talked about, Konami have, Metal Gear Solid, they have Silent Hill, Castlevania. They're the big three.
Yeah.
They probably have more, but, the old PlayStation 1 era RPGs, which the world has forgotten about. Suikoden, they're on that, don't they? Suikoden,
yeah.
But that's been forgotten about outside of the hardcore.
Yeah, I think Vandal Hearts was one of theirs as well.
Again, almost been forgotten.
But I will say, right, when it comes, Konami's shmup game is, and I love that phrasing, shmup game. Their shmup game is second to none, right?
R-Type, was that them?
I don't think R-Type was them, but I know Gradius, I'm pretty sure Gradius was.
R-Type was in a response to Gradius.
Yeah.
Gradius was like the big Mac Daddy.
Yeah.
But I don't think Konami will really sell because they know how valuable they are. I mean, okay, they make a lot of money from Pachinko, but at the same time, they're still invested in the video game world because they keep on making Pez. And yeah. Pez isn't exactly the most profitable IP that they have in their hands. I think it all goes back to the fact that maybe they were financially burnt out by the whole Metal Gear Solid and Hideo Kojima saga, so they're doubling down on the things which are guaranteed to make them money and not cost them the earth. So maybe they'll decide to get back into games again, even though their recent history is not a good one. Their Metal Gear Revengeance, the Contra game they did, were awful, but I wouldn't count them out yet. I mean, if video games has taught us anything, especially with the way Microsoft have climbed back this past 7 years, is to never say never about anybody climbing back from the beyond.
Do you know who's actually, I think they represent the kind of the extremists of climbing back from the beyond is Capcom. Because one time they were dead and buried.
Yeah, it's a sort of PlayStation 3 era, as recent as that.
You know, there was one time Capcom literally could not make money.
Yeah, so let's just run through them. Capcom are one of them. Once upon a time, I would have said that Bethesda, ZeniMax Bethesda, are too big for somebody else to buy and bring under their wing.
Yeah.
Because they're a company which, at previous years, E3s, they've been one of the big companies, they've been one of the big developers, they've had their own press conference.
Exactly.
So it's like Microsoft buying Ubisoft, which just floating that idea, it's never going to happen. They couldn't afford it.
Exactly.
They could afford it, but it'd take them about 2 decades to get the money back.
they'd have to do a lot of house cleaning at the moment with Ubisoft, so let's not go there.
And the same is true of Activision. Those companies are just too bloody big to buy. But Capcom?
Yeah.
Capcom are Bethesda size. As in, they could feasibly be bought, but I don't think they will.
See, I think Capcom are in too strong a position at the moment. Again, it's like Konami. They know they're a desirable property. So then, and the thing is, unlike Konami, Capcom actually have things in the pipeline that they are pushing forward. I mean, the new Resident Evil remakes are wowing everybody, and the new Resident Evil games are wowing everybody.
And there's talk of them developing a Resident Evil 4 style remake in the same way that they've done 2 and 3.
Exactly.
And there's bit of anticipation for a game which doesn't exist yet, as far as we know.
Hmm.
So that is a company with a lot of value, and I don't think they'll be bought.
Yeah.
So here's the question. We've addressed all of the big companies, which if I was a Microsoft player and I heard Sony had bought Capcom, it'd make me think, oh, hang on, maybe I should get a PlayStation. Or if I was a PlayStation owner and they bought Konami, oh, hang on, maybe. Not many of those left. Because of the size, because of the stubbornness, because of the market, because of them knowing their own value. So that means you've got to move down an echelon.
Yeah.
Companies which aren't like big household megaliths to, you know.
Yeah.
Established indies, I guess you'd call them.
Well, I'd say mid-size and established indies. Platinum Games is one of the ones that I would have thought would have been on a list of potential targets. Now, I know Platinum Games has a good relationship with Nintendo and Sony, but that's
More Nintendo these days. With Nintendo, they had that, they're working on Bayonetta 3 almost in perpetuity.
But Nier Replicant is getting a remake, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's the other one. I can't remember the name of it now. It was basically the police one in which you had like a giant monster on a chain. Astral Projection? Astral Chain. Yeah, that's on Nintendo too. So I think their value is really in being all over the marketplace, really.
Yeah.
But from a company who was born, I think they originally were called Clover as they were first born, and they did like Beautiful Joe, which seriously.
Yes.
If somebody ends up buying them, bring that back, because that was a fantastic game, and Akami, the sort of relaunch off the back of those two games, and then they became Platinum and the company which we know now. So I don't think they're beyond being bought.
Yeah.
But I can't see Microsoft doing it.
Yeah, I can't see them doing that. It's the same for something like Bandai Namco, I think, a bit too big as a Japanese developer to be bought because of all the Dragon Ball titles and various things like that.
Well, it's not the Dragon Ball titles. It's the strength of the licenses. They have all the anime licenses.
Yeah, they've got literally all of the anime licenses.
So to buy Bandai Namco, that's half of the expense. You'd also have to buy the licenses for all of this anime. So the company that you bought to make anime games can actually make the anime games that you bought to make them.
Yeah.
Hang on.
That's some logic there.
You know what I'm trying to say, though? It's the same with Warner Brothers. Why Warner Brothers, if somebody was going to buy Warner Brothers games, they'd also have to buy licenses that Warner Brothers Games Studios have made their names making.
Yeah. Same. The thing is, this, by the same token, Atlas and NIS.
Well, Atlas are owned by Sega, aren't they? Part of the Sega system.
Are they? Are Atlas owned by Sega? It is actually a subsidiary of Sega. Yeah.
Which also is another thing, which Atlas had been very tied to Sony.
Sony, yeah. The PS Vita, the PS Vita and the PlayStation 4, the Vita in particular, I'd say.
So I don't think that's a doable thing. So we have to go a little bit further down the totem pole.
Well, not a little bit further, but a little bit to the side. See, there are a couple. I know we've ruled out Platinum Games and stuff like that, but what about From Software?
Again, I think they're a company which are very big and they know their value. Because that's such a weird turn of fate. Because I remember before they released Demon's Souls, they were the company that were known for Front Mission, I believe it was called.
Yep.
Which was
Front Mission was Square Enix, wasn't it?
That was something like that, though. It was like a robot game.
Armored Core. You're on about Armored Core.
Yeah, they're known for a robot game, which was very difficult.
Armored Core.
But yes, when they were doing that, they weren't really well regarded at all.
Yeah.
They were just kind of another Japanese game publisher that sort of delivered middle of the road, but middle range.
Yeah.
Interesting, but not quite their games.
Yeah. Do you know, we forgot Monster Hunter World when we were talking about Capcom. So there you go. All the Monster Hunter fans, we've mentioned it now.
There's another big sort of string in their cap, isn't it, for Capcom? Yeah. But I think From Software, the fact that they were developing with Sony, they developed with Activision, I think they're very fundamentally aware of the fact that they're worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's beyond them being bought.
Yeah. I think that they're... If I was going to be looking for Japanese developers, From Software would be one of the ones I'd look at.
I mean, honestly, I think that there could be a decent shout for Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, the games that they have, that they release are cross-platform. I don't think they have any exclusives on any console, do they?
Yeah, but the fact that all the PlayStation fanboys who say here Bloodborne is one of the big PlayStation exclusives. We love Bloodborne. Sony own that license.
Yeah.
But if all those people who are in love with the games that they do suddenly learn that those sorts of games are going to be exclusive to Microsoft. I know you could say Demon's Souls muddies the waters, but that's been a remake which is owned by Sony and developed by Bluepoint. But if those games from the future going on were going to be exclusive on Microsoft, oh my word, so many PlayStation guys would just jump ship.
Yeah.
If not jump ship, they'd get like a second machine.
I'm going to throw out a curveball here, right? And this is a total curveball because I really like Koei Tecmo, and they do a lot of stuff that are PlayStation exclusives, right? They have a very strong relationship with Sony and the PlayStation. A lot of the games come out on the PlayStation, you know.
They do some on Nintendo as well, like with the Hyrule stuff. Hyrule Warriors, I think they do.
But most of their stuff comes out on PlayStation. Doesn't really come out on PC or Xbox. Some of their stuff comes out on PC, but not really on Xbox. So a total curveball, right, which would really, really kind of throw the gauntlet down to Sony would be if Microsoft bought Koei Tecmo.
Yeah.
That would literally, that for me, that would basically be, right, gloves are off, let's go to war. This is a proper console war.
I don't think that they use a phrase which a lot of people are very fond of these days. I don't think it'd move the needle for a lot of people.
It wouldn't move the needle for a lot of people, but it would move the needle for the market itself, because then Sony would have to be on guard with the other exclusive developers for the PlayStation. Do you see what I mean? And it would be the opening kind of salvo in tit for tat buying of developers, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm just going to say this point here. When it comes to buying developers, I don't think that's the market that Sony are in.
Yeah.
Sony were in the market of developing their companies from smaller to bigger, and then when they get to like Insomniac level or Sucker Punch level, they buy them and make them they buy them and make them their own. Microsoft isn't the same. Microsoft is just throwing money around. Microsoft will buy a studio which is already developed.
Yeah. See, Sony are using the Nintendo model. Nintendo are notorious for basically doing exactly that. Starting a small development team, letting it grow bigger, and then absorbing it into the Nintendo kind of behemoth.
Yeah. I'd say EA also buy companies that are pretty popular as well, and then just basically cannibalize them and ruin them.
Yeah. But anyway, we've talked a lot about Japanese developers. There are a few other developers.
Yeah, I mean, let's just run through them quick because I don't think... Well, Remedy is one of them. That's not going to happen. They were recently in an exclusivity deal with Microsoft. I think if they're going anywhere, it'd be Sony. But as we just said, Sony probably aren't going to buy them.
Yeah.
Of all companies that exist out there, I'd say they're most likely. But at the same time, I don't think it's that likely at all.
Yeah. Bloober Team is a possibility.
Which is ironically a company which is developed under the wing of Microsoft. They have got bigger and better under Microsoft, which is kind of contrary to the way we're throwing around money right now.
Exactly. But I don't think Bloober Team would be averse to actually coming on board with Microsoft officially and becoming part of Microsoft.
No, I'd say that's quite likely, to be honest.
You know, another possibility is Hello Games of No Man's Sky.
Yeah, because from what I understand it, the reason why No Man's Sky was such a... I mean, this is hearsay and internet rumours, so I take this with like a huge pinch of salt.
Yeah.
But the reason why No Man's Sky was so rushed and poorly received is because Sony was demanding too much for him too quickly.
Yeah, that's what I heard as well.
It's only now, like 4 years later, that No Man's Sky is actually a secure and stable game and delivering what was suggested that was going to be delivered.
Well, it's interesting you say that because I heard similar rumours about how Shenmue 3 turned out. That the limitations were placed on the development of Shenmue 3 so that it only worked in certain ways. Because it always confused me, why in the modern age would you make a game that plays like that?
Yeah, I mean, if it was a remaster, I'd say, yeah, sure, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's a fresh, brand new title.
Yeah.
And it's awful.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense to me why somebody who was as forward-thinking a developer and a games creator as Yu Suzuki would be so rigidly hidebound to making a game that played exactly like it did on the Dreamcast.
There's two more. Team 17, UK, these are both the UK developers, but Team 17, best known for Worms, but they're also, they put up a lot of interesting things. They used to be known for Worms, but Rob's laughing because he thinks known for Worms, he thinks, blah, 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 blah. I'm funny. But they've became much more than that franchise.
And they do some really interesting stuff. That pinball game, the platform pinball game, what was it called?
I don't know, Rob.
We played at EGX a couple of years ago.
I'm not in your brain, Rob. I don't know what it's thinking.
But yeah, they had this really interesting platform pinball game, which we played at EGX, which was actually a lot of fun.
Well, that's true of a lot of their stuff, but honestly, I think Team 17 are quite happy being indie.
Yeah, I mean, the other big one from Team 17, not just Worms, is Overcooked. That's a big online game, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I could see Microsoft buying them, but I don't know. I don't think they'd really be interested. I think they'd be interested in more profiled developers.
Yeah.
Because I don't think outside in the UK, Team 17 are very well known.
Yeah.
But globally, I don't think they have that sort of cachet, whereas if you... They announced in America that they bought Team 17, there'd be lots of shrugs.
Yeah, loads of people would go, who?
Yeah.
Yoku's Island Express.
Yeah, they'd be doing him a disservice, but Team 17, I think, are one of the more unsung heroes of UK games.
Yeah, that game was Yoku's Island Express. I remembered it. Yeah.
And the last one is Codemasters.
Yes. See, this is the one that confused me a little bit. Codemasters have gone from doing all sorts of games that they used to do for years on actual computer games from when I was a kid. You know, Commodore Amiga, Commodore 64, ZX Spectrum, moving on from there to the, you know, when they got to the PlayStation 1 era, they seem to focus more on racing games like Toka and stuff like that. And they have become the developer for racing games.
Which I don't think Microsoft need, because they have Playground games and they do very nicely from Forza.
Yeah. And this is where it gets confusing, because I don't think Microsoft would buy Codemasters for any other reason than they can. You know?
Yeah.
I think if they bought Codemasters, they would happily just leave Codemasters as Codemasters, just owned by Microsoft. Safe in the knowledge that Codemasters is still doing its own thing, still churning out high quality racing games, you know, officially licensed ones as well, but still doing its own thing, doing it, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, kind of thing.
I think there's that aspect to it as well. If they buy Codemasters, they also have to buy the licenses which Codemasters use, which knocks the price up again.
Oh, God, yeah. But, I mean, Codemasters did come out with a really interesting take on the racing game, which was Grid.
Hmm.
The whole idea of social media and YouTube and racing all mixed together. Moon Studios. All right.
Yeah, I think that's, again, another one which Microsoft have developed in the way that they've done with Bloober. So I feel like it's inevitability that they will eventually be brought on in under Microsoft sooner or later.
Okay.
So to conclude, so if you were Microsoft and you have the money, who would you put your name and reputation on them buying? I don't want to include PlayStation in this because, like I said, I think Remedy maybe, but beyond that, I wouldn't push it.
Yeah.
Beyond them making their own little studios.
From the list of developers that we've thrown out there, from the list of Japanese developers starting off there, okay, I can't rule out Sega, but I don't think it's going to be now. I think if Microsoft do buy Sega, it will happen. It will happen eventually, but it won't be right now. They've just shelled out a lot of money for ZeniMax, and I don't think Sega are a worthwhile proposition yet. I think they'll basically develop some exclusive titles, next gen exclusive titles with Sega first, and then kind of go into a partnership, maybe a merger, something like that. But I think in terms of the Japanese developers, it's difficult. I know Konami have a good relationship with Sony, but like you said, they know they're wanted. But I can't rule out Konami as like the primary target.
Yeah.
In terms of Western developers, I'd have to go with Hello Games.
Yeah, it's not one that has moved the needle much, but it makes a lot of sense.
You know. I mean, the PC and the Xbox are kind of the home of space flight simulators, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, it, you know, Hello Games would be a natural fit with that kind of environment.
For me, I think Bloober and Moon are kind of self-explanatory, I've went on to say. But beyond that, I don't think they're going to throw around the money as much as news outlets suggest they are.
Yeah, I don't think they are either.
I think if anybody, Platinum.
Really?
Because a lot of Microsoft games, the ones that are available and will work on the Nintendo Switch engine are on Nintendo Switch. I mean, look at Cuphead, look at, I think Ori's on there too. So there's a working relationship there between Microsoft and Nintendo for some of their titles, some of their less exhaustive titles.
That's a really good point.
So if they were going to buy Platinum, they've already got that working relationship with Nintendo, so they could continue to develop Bayonetta, they could continue Astral Chain and whatever, but they could also make some titles for Microsoft exclusively too.
Yeah, I know some people have talked about, you know, Microsoft potentially buying Warner Brothers or CD Projekt Red, but I don't honestly see that happening.
I think Platinum is the right sort of size. I don't think they're going to go and buy another like $7.5 billion company.
Yeah.
I think they'd be a bit more smart with the money going forward and buy a company which has a lot of fandom, a lot of interest around it. And Platinum are a company which have a lot of fans, but it wouldn't break the bank to buy them.
Yeah.
I think it makes a lot of sense if they were buy Platinum, Bloober and Moon.
From Software is the other possibility.
That's a proper baller move, that though, isn't it? That's
Yeah.
That's That's not an expensive move, but it's a cocky as hell move.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a slap your meat on the table move.
It is, and I'm not using the sausage clip again. Right, so if you have any alternative suggestions, if you agree with us, you disagree with us, you disagree with our reasoning, whatever, please do comment below, because this is an interesting talking point, we feel. So yeah, do comment below with any of that.
I'm Graham Williamson, and I like films starring pop stars. I like films about pop stars. I like films which have set design by pop stars. Probably gone a bit far there, I can't actually think of one of those. Anyway, this is why I've launched The Geek Show's new podcast, Pop Screen, where every week, me and a guest host take a look at one film, either starring by or about a pop star, and by pop I could mean anything from heavy metal to blues to disco to hip-hop, and we analyse it relentlessly, asking all of the big questions.
Ewan, who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Oh no. Can I say Richard E. Grant's my favourite Spice Girl?
And even giving some of the big answers with our unparalleled level of research and nerdishness.
I'm definitely a Beatles fan. I was on a Beatles tour taxi in Liverpool with my family, and the tour guide started referring to me for little details and to double check his facts.
So, whether you're an absolute beginner or a 24-hour party person, get swept away. I'll stop doing this now, I promise. By Pop Screen, the new podcast from the Geek Show Podcast Network. It's about music, it's about movies, it's about nonsense. We're hosted on Audioboom and available on your podcast provider of choice, as well as the Geek Show's YouTube channel. Remember to like and subscribe.
Perplexed by the pompous, ponderous piffle purveyed by normal art critics? Well, you've come to the right place, because we're not normal. We take a not-so-serious look at the serious worlds of art and literature. Join Sarah, Andrew, Rob and Graham for a piffle-free journey through the cultural landscape of the 21st century. Literary loitering. Because you can't make a cultural omelette without smashing a few eggheads.
And welcome to Marmalade. And it's the beginning of October, so we're going to be looking back at what games we've been playing over the last month. So I'm going to kick things off with an interesting little indie game that I found on the PlayStation Network. It's on Steam as well, and it's called Never Alone. It's developed by Upper One Games, published by Eli Media. But do you know the thing I kind of love about it is that it's telling a story about a culture, a living, breathing culture, a living, breathing people through a game. Thing is, it's your common garden puzzle platformer. You play as a little, how do you say it? I hope I'm not going to butcher this, but it's a Inupiaq? Inupiaq?
You're as close as anybody's going to get, let's be honest. Who doesn't speak the language and who isn't versed in it?
Yeah.
You got as close as you're going to get.
Yeah, you play as a young Inupiaq girl and who basically leaves her village looking for the source of this ongoing blizzard, and she makes friends with a fox who might be a spirit, might be just a normal fox, you don't know. And it's basically like this co-op puzzle platformer game with some combat elements, because you get this spiritual bowler from the Owl Man at some point in the game, which you can direct. It's a bit cumbersome, that bit, I thought, the way you direct it and release it.
It's incredibly cumbersome, and the only enemy you face is a polar bear who just chases you forever.
Everything around that, though, I thought the aesthetic, you know, I thought the white on black on grey on kind of pale blue, a light blue, that sort of aesthetic, I thought that worked really well, so that when you had like a fire or something like that, it really stood out in stark contrast to the rest of the imagery that's around. I mean, there's no point in me talking about controls because we've already talked about the bowler thing, and the rest of it's fairly simple. It's a puzzle platformer.
I wasn't that won over by it.
See, this is the thing. I think from my perspective, because I love stories, I love things related to stories and things that are telling stories.
Yeah, but a story's not that interesting.
See,
in fact, it's not even a story.
See, that's the thing. What I liked about it was that wasn't so much the story itself. It was the fact that you were opening up these segments on the Inupiaq culture. You know, all those little documentary bits that they were, that they'd filmed that you could watch in the in one of the other sections, which I found those bits were quite fascinating because it's a look into a living, breathing culture that still exists.
Yeah. I mean, it's a topic that I've wanted to do on Impossible Mission maybe for a while. Can educational games be a thing?
Yeah.
And the short version of that story, or that episode for me anyway, would be, yes, they can be a thing as long as the game themselves is interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't think this game is that interesting. It's kind of a very workaday side-scrolling platformer, which got an awful lot more critical acclaim than it probably deserved, purely because of the fact that it was representing a group of people who aren't represented in any medium, really. And that comes down to my idea, the thing that I think a lot, you know, representation isn't the be-all and end-all. There's a difference between representation and tokenism.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is tokenism, but I also don't think it's, well, yeah, there's thoughts that I've got there swirling around, but
yeah,
I wasn't that impressed with it. I found it kind of lackluster.
Well, this is the thing. I kind of get what you mean. The things that I like about this game aren't really related to the game itself, the way it plays, everything like that. I found it a little bit cumbersome when it comes to the game itself, and it just felt...
I mean, I don't know about you, but there's a bit with a polar bear where you're in like this room and you've got to escape the room.
Yeah.
And it doesn't give you any sort of clues as to how you do it. And I watched a YouTube video which basically says you've got to make the polar bear bang his head against the ice brick wall, which the ice brick wall will fall. And at that one point does it give you a clue that you're supposed to do that. Which is fine. Lots of games don't hold your hand, but there's a difference between holding your hand and not giving you the slightest inkling of what the hell's going on.
And that's one of the bits that annoyed me about this game. Because there are several occasions when that happens. There's a bit where you're... it's after you, after the little girl finds out, spoilers, by the way, if you haven't played this, but it's after the little girl finds out about her village and you have to go underground where the little people are because they've stolen, the owl man's thing and you have to get it back. And there's the bit where he's throwing boulders at you and I'm on this platform that tilts like a seesaw and I'm going, okay, I have to avoid the boulders, but what do I do next? What do I do next? And I kept dying at that bit from boulders landing on me or on the fox.
Also, I kept dying because the platforming is really imprecise.
Yeah. I was going to mention that in a second, but I kept dying at that bit because I didn't know I was supposed to let the boulder go to the other side of the platform to raise the platform up so I could jump over the gap. Didn't know that, and it doesn't tell you that at any point. Now, that I know is fairly easy to figure out after a bit, trial and error and all that. But, as you said, the platforming is imprecise. But then again, I kind of forgive that because it's an indie game.
Yeah, there's many indie games where the platforming is crisp.
Yeah.
That's not an excuse for a game to be kind of lackluster in one of the key departments.
Yeah, I accept that. But I think that a lot of their effort went on to kind of promoting the culture and making people aware of the culture.
Yeah, I don't buy that. You can do both. There's not like pressure for them to release a game quickly. Indie games can release it when they want to release it. And the fact that it's so far after the fact.
Yeah.
This was released, what, like 2013, 2014?
2014, yeah.
This could have been patched in the 6 years since, and it hasn't been. Which, again, speaks to what I say. I found it kind of lackluster. It's not been updated in all this time. That's kind of, yeah.
You know, I liked it, but like you said, there are problems with it. I liked what it was trying to do, I think, more than I actually liked the game. I liked the approach it was taken, and I think that's all I can really say about it.
That's fair.
The documentary bits were fascinating. Don't get me wrong. Those were all fascinating. And that's the bit that I liked about it the most.
The thing that you haven't actually... The lead that you have buried is it's not actually delivered in English or French or Japanese.
I was going to get to that.
That's probably one of the more interesting aspects of it, so I'll let you pick up that bone that are through you.
Well, I was going to get to that, the fact that it's all in the Inupiaq language. And what the other aspect that I like was that I think it's the second documentary, which is Tell Me a Story, And that's the whole basis of the game, is an old man telling the story of the, of this young girl who is basically just a myth or something like that. And that's the character that you play in the game, is this girl from this story, you know? And that, I thought, was an interesting aspect. But again, like you said, the gameplay lets it down.
Yeah, which is kind of a big thing for a game, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. More on that in a bit.
Rob, on the last edition of Monthly Marmalade, Games Marmalade, at the beginning of September, his sort of through line throughout the entirety of the episode was that he's come back off like a major games fatigue.
Yeah. I mean, we're not talking like 1 or 2 weeks or a couple of months. We're talking a long time. Most of the PS4 generation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've actually enjoyed the PlayStation 4 generation that much. One of the upcoming episodes of, and actually this next one coming up.
Yeah.
So do we think it's a good generation? No, we don't. Yeah, I'm struggling with my gamer status, really. And the next generation isn't exactly filling me with hope that it's going to improve. But what I've really looked at is doubling down on the things that I like. And one of the things I like is Ryu Gagatoku games. I've not been playing another Yakuza because that would frankly be repetitive, and to repeat myself so much in two episodes would be frankly ludicrous.
I know what you've been playing.
But I've been playing Judgment.
Yeah.
Judgment is curious. It takes place in Kamurocho. You play a ex-lawyer turned private investigator who's heavily affiliated with the Toho clan, but it's not the Toho clan with Goro Majima, Kiryu, Daigoro, or anybody like that. No. This is the alternate reality Kamurocho. And just on that point, it's really weird, because it's so familiar, but so different. The first person you meet in Kamurocho, who's like Toho clan, is just, he's a proper gangster.
Does he roll his R's and everything?
Near enough. Say what you will about Majima and Kiryu, they're not gangsters. I mean, one of them's basically a cartoon pirate, and the other one's basically a karaoke singing meat castle with a fetish for bikes.
See, the thing is, your description's great, but I think you've forgotten they're both idealistic romantics.
Yes, that sort of aspect of it's not there. It's much more grounded, and the Toho clan actually feel dangerous. Like genuinely dangerous, but I've kind of buried the lead. It's in the Yakuza games. In the Yakuza games, you basically just meet Castle and your way through things. You got a problem, I'm going to meet Castle this in the face.
Going to hit you with a signboard and then flatten you.
And then like throw a knife in your stomach and then knee it in your stomach all the way through. But he's not dead, he's just sleeping.
There are bicycles everywhere. They're weapons, they're not bicycles.
Yeah. But in this, he's a martial artist, the lead character. He's not just punching everything really hard and kicking them into oblivion. He's got martial arts techniques.
I will say, Judgment has one of the best heat mods.
Maybe.
The drunken boxing one.
Yeah, it's kind of cliche, isn't it?
It's kind of cliche, but what I want to know is, where did he get the drink from?
It's Kamurocho, you can get things. But it's a detective game. And the only detective game that I've really played some indie ones, like indie point and click, but that's not really the same, is it?
No.
The only real sort of profiled investigator game, detective game, is L.A. Noire. And that's basically like reacting to people's gurns. Because that's what they did, like the gurning in different ways. What could he possibly be thinking? I don't know, because he's basically chewing on something really chewy. And it could be millions of things. There's no way to gauge what the hell's happening here. This is awful. How did this get a claim? Go away, you stupid game.
You've played Goat Simulator, now play Gun Simulator.
Yeah, Judgment, you got to go find the clues. You got to ask the right questions. Got to go to the right places. And it's this thing that I didn't actually realise I wanted. Cause honestly, I mean, the most, it could have been in a different place. I think that's kind of a cop-out. It could have been, a number of places that they've been to in the Yakuza franchise of Ryu Gagatoku. They've been all over Japan, Osaka, all over the place, Yokohama, all over the place. And they just recycle Kamurocho again. It's one of the things that always comes back to me in the Yakuza. The one problem I have with the Yakuza thing, it uses that place so much, it starts to feel a bit lazy.
Yeah.
I love them dearly, but you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do see what you mean. I mean, one of the things I like about Yakuza games is from Yakuza 0 all the way through to Yakuza 6, and I'm including the Koami games rather than the original versions of the games, you get to see Kamurocho and Osaka change over time. You'll see different signs and stuff like that. But that's the only real change. The street layout's basically the same.
Identical, yeah.
You know, and that's the thing that, you know, I'd like them to basically include more areas of Japan. In Osaka, you've basically got, like, the main shopping areas, but it'd be nice if they could include some of the more touristy areas.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see what they're going to do in, like, the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like, usually there's, like, a point where there's an invisible wall and you can't cross that road.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like what Judgment's done. I hope they'll continue it because it's nice to see them sort of stretch the legs creatively.
Yeah.
I mean, Kiryu, I love Kiryu dearly. Maybe Ichiban, I think the new guy's called. Which is an odd name for a character. That's number one, isn't it, Ichiban?
Yeah. Well, so. Yeah. Do you know who he reminds me of?
Who?
Right. There's a Japanese band who did the theme tune for a particular anime series. I can't remember what it was. Death Parade. That was it. And the band is called Flyer, Bradio. And the song was called Flyers. And the lead singer of Bradio looks like the younger brother or the younger identical twin of the main character from the new Yakuza game.
But, yeah, I mean, the amount of rhetoric on, like, you see Sega pushing the new Yakuza game, and the amount of comments like, oh, this isn't my Yakuza, when it's turn-based nonsense, oh, it's crap, it's crap, it's crap, it's crap. They've said in interviews that they've kind of taken that formula as far as they could, so they'd like to try something else. If it works, fantastic. If it doesn't, we'll go back to the old thing. This is the same way I look at Judgment. Judgment is them sort of trying something new, and yeah, they're very good at it. The whole investigative stuff I really like.
Well, this is one of the reasons why we like the Yakuza games, is because of the creativity and the thought that goes into the games and the thought that goes into the fine details that make up the game. Okay, so the combat system is different from how it's been before. You don't play it just for the combat, do you?
No, I mean, in Judgment, he moves like a squid, basically.
Yeah, but I mean, Yakuza games are games that you play because you love the characters, you love the setting, you want to see what happens next, you know? You play the games...
Have you seen the Majima summon, by the way?
Yes.
He runs down the side of the building throwing knives at the other guy. It's amazing.
Well, Majima is kind of... I think more people like Majima than like Kiryu at this point.
Well, it's impossible not to, and the amount of shitposting about Goro Majima is amazing.
Yeah, but I mean...
It's a black hole you should never fall into, by the way.
Yeah, anyone who plays Yakuza 0 as well, right, just be prepared to fall in love with Majima.
I've been in love with the character.
I know, I'm warning everyone else. I'm warning everyone else, right, especially the people who have not played Yakuza 0 and don't like Majima. Think he's a bit of a weirdo. If you've not played Yakuza 0, you don't understand.
I think that's a segue.
Yes, it is a segue, because the next game that I want to talk about is, well, this game had problems, right? This game had big problems, because it was originally supposed to come out. It was originally supposed to come out in 2011, I think.
When did it come out?
It then came out in 2014, and the reason it came out was because for the delay was because the production was halted in 2011, 3 days after the Tohoku earthquake and tsunami. And,
okay.
And there's a very specific reason why this game, well, basically it's Disaster Report 4, and there's no way they could release that game at that point. No way.
No, I mean, as far as I understand it, even to this day, there's in the north, there's problems.
Yeah.
Post-earthquake and tsunami.
Exactly. I mean, eventually, Disaster Report 4 came out, and because this game was originally meant for the PS3, and it shows in so many ways. It was finally released in 2018. Sorry, it got a new publisher in 2014, finally released in 2018. And it's developed by Granzella, published by NIS America. And yeah, see, you play the role of somebody who's just basically going into town. You get to develop your character at the beginning of the game. You get a basic character creator, and mine ended up looking like some kind of Zorro wannabe with the gray, shock of green hair and stuff like that. And then as the story goes on, you basically get to choose your character traits. You know, you can be selfish, you can be helpful, you can be just kind of looking out for yourself, rather than being obscenely selfish. You can basically just be, look, I'm going to look after myself first before I can look after anyone else. But if I see someone who needs help, I might help them if it doesn't kind of put me in danger. Or you can be like a total altruist and say, I'm going to help everybody. Then the earthquake happens and you basically have to escape the city. Now, some differences to this game. It's got a load of playable characters that you can use. I think there's more in this than any other Disaster Report game. And cleanliness has become one of the parameters to keep your stress level down. Because your stress level is something that you have to manage in this game. You're in the middle of a disaster zone. You're trying to escape the disaster zone.
Oh, I hate that sort of thing in games, I'll be honest. Measure management, like when your character's thirsty and you've got to keep him drinking, and then when he gets too thirsty, the character ends up dying or hunger meters.
Thankfully, those aren't really that much of an issue. The stress is the major issue and your health is a major issue. And the thing that annoyed me about this was it was originally developed for the PS3 and it shows in so many ways. This looks and plays like a PS3 game, right?
What does that mean, though?
I mean that...
People say that all the time. Like, playing like a PlayStation 3 game is like a sin. How could you play like a PlayStation 3 game?
No, I'm not saying
it's terrible.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad thing on the PS3.
It's kind of become like a shorthand, isn't it? Like, people say, oh, it's so bad it plays like a PlayStation 2 game. Come on.
See, what I'm talking about is that the controls are clunky, right, for the PS4, right? For the PS3, I could live with it. If this came out on the PS3, I'd be fine with it. Totally fine. But the fact is, it's on a much more powerful console. It's had more development time since the new publishers got hold of it. So it's had an extra 4 years of development time that they could have used to basically improve it for the PS4, right? In fact, during that time, they probably could have rebuilt the game from the ground up. But it doesn't feel like they've done that. It feels like they've basically just added on to what they originally had to try and get the game out in amongst whatever other problems they were having. But when I say it plays like a PS4, PS3 game, and it looks like a PS3 game, I mean in terms of the graphical quality, the character models, the animation, it's nowhere near the level of what you expect on a PS4.
Yeah.
And the fact that there are only certain basic actions, you can't jump in this game, which is...
I remember those days.
I mean, how can you not jump in a game where... you have to navigate your way through various disaster areas. You can crawl and, you know, navigate your way through on a first-person perspective, right? But you can't jump.
I love that aspect. You can, in like a first-person shooter, you can take down like a flight of tanks, but once you get like a shin-high curb, it's like, no, it's too much, man.
What am I, a Dalek?
Yes, apparently PlayStation 3 era things were Daleks.
And that's the thing, you can't climb, you can't jump, you can go into buildings and stuff and explore buildings, and that's great. That's a big improvement from the old games. I played a few of the old games before. The cleanliness thing is quite an interesting thing because of the stress level, but it does mean that your character can now go to the toilet as well. And there are some humorous moments to lighten the mood. I basically went into a changing room in this clothing store, and one of the options was... you know, admire yourself in the mirror. So I chose that option, and my character's just going, yes, I look good, don't I?
That's lightening the mood.
It's amusing because I just changed the character's outfit to something that made him look more like a Yakuza with a flat cap, like a Yorkshire Yakuza.
I'm shaking my head in disgust, by the way.
A Yakuza.
Just so you know.
I'm a Philistine, aren't I? I should go stand in the corner for that.
Yeah, you are.
Disaster Report 4, Summer Memories, that's what it's called, the full title. It takes place during the summer in Hisui City during the year 20-whatever. Never gives you the year, and your character, as I said, you develop the character traits as you play the game, and you kind of have to reinforce those traits as you're playing the game.
Yeah.
In principle, it's actually a great concept for a game. I think it's got some really good ideas, and I think that it's, you know, I think that with a bit more work and a bit more effort, it could have been a really good game. But it's not at the moment.
Like so many Japanese games, that seems to be true.
Yeah.
It's not an era, it's not an industry in a boom period, is it? The Japanese game industry.
I don't think it is. I mean, I think certain publishers and developers are, you know, are okay at the moment. But I think in general, the Japanese games industry isn't doing too great. And this is one example of it. I don't expect this kind of level from a game that's in the fourth iteration of its franchise. Even
you say that, but there's that, what's that game called where you basically side scroll left to right and shoot giant ants from space?
You don't side scroll anymore. You're talking about Earth Defense Force, and
barely developed over decades.
No. Earth Defense Force has developed a lot. You
now go forward too.
It's 3D character models. You have different guns. You can run. You can jump. You can have characters who fly through the sky. There's all sorts of things you can do in Earth Defense Force. And if you annoy enough of the ants or whatever it is you're fighting, whichever insects they are, if you annoy enough of them, you can basically... I had one scene where I was basically standing at the bottom of a church and the ants are pouring in through a hole in the top of the church and I'm shooting them down. It just felt like the last scene... You know that scene in Aliens where... what's his name? You know the one who says...
Bill Paxton.
Yeah, Bill Paxton's character, where he's at the end going, come on, get some. He's just shooting away. It just felt like that.
It's still garbage, though.
It's still garbage, yeah. It's utter garbage, but it was fun. And Disaster Report 4, okay, it's a serious game because it's dealing with a disaster area. You have to save people. You have to save yourself. It lacks any emotional impact. You don't really relate to the characters, and it plays like a clunker.
A clunker?
Yeah.
That's a box quote that if ever I heard one. Plays like a clunker.
I'm sorry, but it's the fairest assessment I can give for a game. And I played this for a while wanting to like it, because I've liked the other Disaster Report games. The other games had some kind of emotional depth to them, but this one just felt really, really shallow.
Yeah, okay. So I've only played two games this month, because like I said, I've really been struggling with games, I'll be honest. I mean, even like the big announcements for the new big titles... They're not really doing it for me. I tell you what is doing it for me. I mean, you said before how you really are appealed by stories.
Yeah.
Stories are your thing.
Yeah.
I'm much shallower than that. I'm much, much shallower than that. I'm appealed to by aesthetics. Art direction does a hell of a lot more for me than AAA game with whatever Frostbite engine or whatever engine. Decima engine, I don't care. Doesn't mean a thing to me. Aesthetics make the world a difference.
Yeah.
So I've been playing new on Games Pass for PC, Night in the Woods.
Ooh.
Which is a game I've wanted to play for a while, but its price has kind of stayed pretty solid up there. So this is a great opportunity to get in the game that I've been looking forward to for a while. You play May, a millennial angsty cat who comes back to her hometown and some murderings are happening. It's also got character, though. It's one of these things I've got to relate it to movies so often, the case for me. When it's a coming-of-age movie, if it's about women, I'll relate to it far more. Now, I don't know what that says about me at all. In fact, I'm kind of confused.
Okay. I have to ask. Does this mean you actually liked that Britney Spears movie?
I have no idea what you're talking about. As in, no, she did a movie, but yeah, Frances Ha, Lady Bird, I relate to me much more than other things have.
Yeah,
this is the same. It's about a young woman who's come back from university, who's dropped out of college, and I relate to that. I relate to the vibe of these characters so much. And that's the sort of... It's an adventure game, which isn't an adventure. It's basically just pottering around your little one-horse town. That's another aspect of it that I really relate to. One of the things that's really defined my life for the past decade is I really hate my hometown. Like, I really hate this place. like so much.
It's true, he does.
But yeah, this is a story about a girl who goes to college. College isn't for her. She comes back home defeated, which is very relatable.
Yeah.
And also, it's got like great characters. This is reminding me of Mutazone. It's a game which has its loads of art, aesthetic, great music. And I just relate with the characters so much. And again, that's another female lead. What is it with me? What's happening? I can't keep track of myself. But yeah, I really, really like Night in the Woods. It's the sort of thing which is appealing to me more and more these days. It's the aesthetics. It's the mood of the visuals, the art direction. It's the music. It's the sense of personality, which it's sort of people I know and the characters.
Yeah.
If I play another game where it's about some white dude saving the world, I just don't care anymore. I really don't care. And I'm speaking as a white dude. So that should be relating with these white dudes saving the world, but I'm not. I'm really not. I'm relating to white girls in the suburbs going through hard times.
And
I'm relating to white dudes saving the world.
Does this mean...
And I know I'm laughing when I'm saying this. I'm laughing because I don't know how else to respond, because admitting it's kind of weird, isn't it?
Well, it does lead me to my next question. Does this mean that you were influenced by Richard Ayoade and now you have a greater appreciation of the movie White Chicks?
Again, you're referencing stuff that I have no idea what you're talking about. I know Richard Ayoade, I know the movie White Chicks, but that's it.
There's an episode of 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown. That was he brought White Chicks on and started singing its praises.
Oh, well, I haven't seen it. But yeah, I really like Night in the Woods, and honestly, that's appealing to me more. And I'm fearful, you know, that game which is on PlayStation 5. There's like, what, Returnal, which looks cool. There's God of War Ragnarok, which is being announced.
Yeah.
All this and all that. And I'm fear that the one that I'm really going to dig is Goodbye Volcano High. And I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's happening.
Right,
Rob.
I'll tell you something. Goodbye Volcano High, I've actually got my eye on. I think that's actually going to be a sleeper hit.
But you understand what I mean?
Yeah.
This is not the way I used to appreciate games, well, but just something's twisted recently. Something's turned.
I think it's one of the effects of gaming fatigue, is that you start looking for things that are a bit more esoteric, a bit more intriguing, a bit more interesting. You're no longer part of the AAA crowd.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, what I described them all as is a little bit more human.
Yeah, but...
You mean that you play it as an anthropomorphic cat called May?
Yeah.
But it's much more human.
Well, that's what I mean. The reason why is because it is more human. Games like that are generally more human. And that's actually a great segue for me.
Well, I'm glad I set you up with it, so...
You know how you're all about the aesthetics and I'm all about the story, yeah?
Yeah.
Well... There was a game that came out on the Xbox One, and it was an Xbox One exclusive at the time, but now it's on the PS4 as well. And it's developed by Cold War Interactive, released by Electronic Arts, and you know what? EA done good with this one, because this, quite literally, is the essence of aesthetics and story combined into one beautiful platforming whole.
So you're talking about FIFA 20?
No, I'm talking about Unravel. Oh my god. Oh my god, is this game gorgeous. And I knew it was good looking when we saw the demos of it and everything like that, when we see the trailers of it and everything like that. Didn't realise just how in-depth it was in terms of the story and how much of the storytelling is told through actions rather than words, through imagery rather than words. There's basically no real voices in this. The story is basically... You know, all about memories, all about an old woman's memories through her life, and you are a ball of yarn who's come to life, and you're basically travelling your way through gardens and various things like that, picking up different bits of memories, and it's just, there's a beauty to this that I find difficult to describe. The thing is, the beauty in this, right, imagine a typical English garden, yeah? Or a garden from... anywhere else in the Western world, yeah?
I remember the outside world, yeah.
Now, and if you are fond of the outside world and you want to revisit the outside world, Unravel is the game to play, by the way. Imagine you are only a few inches tall and you're navigating your way through an overgrown garden, through old tricycles and old garden sheds and stuff like that, looking for bits of memories, right? and you are a ball of yarn, and you're tied down by this ball of yarn. So as you're traveling further, your the yarn that makes you, is actually running out. So you have to find other bits of yarn in the garden to actually replenish the yarn that you've got, and you have to tie them together so you can basically be whole again and continue your journey. And you can use your yarn in interesting ways. You can use it as like a lasso, and you can swing from side to side. You can tie the ends off and make a little bridge that you can push things on, or become a trampoline.
Yeah.
You know, it's really fascinating the way it's used. And there are elements of this that I can see in that Kirby game, Kirby's Epic Yarn. I can see elements of Kirby's...
Because that was like, that was much more impressive than Unraveled, though, because that whole world is made out of wool, isn't it?
That whole world...
In Kirby.
See, this is the thing. Everyone says that whole world, Kirby's whole world, is made out of wool. And that's why it's more impressive. You know what? I disagree.
Well, aesthetics is a kind of eye of the beholder, isn't it? I mean, for me, that whole world made out of yarn is like... It reminds me of what was the game? Well, the Lego movie, actually. It reminds me of the Lego movie.
Yeah. No, I think the Kirby's Epic Yarn, I think the whole world being made out of yarn is a brilliant achievement. But I disagree because Unravel, literally, it looks like a ball of yarn in a normal world, right? The actual imagery, that contrast between a character made out of a ball of yarn, something like Sackboy, right? If Sackboy was sitting on your shelf, moving around, doing his own thing, imagine that.
So hopefully you're listening to this, and hopefully you've got a plush of Sackboy, and hopefully you're going to look behind you, make sure that Sackboy's not doing things while you're not watching. Because I can guarantee you, Sackboy does stuff. He does butt stuff.
but anyway,
undermining you completely.
See, I was talking about something beautiful and wholesome, and he went and ruined it.
Well, Sackboy likes butt stuff. What do you think Sackboy's big adventure's about, Rob?
Right, okay, back to Unravel. I think it's technically, in terms of the aesthetics, it's technically brilliant, okay? The garden scenes, you have little insects flying off, you have scenes where you've got just like badgers and different, other countryside animals just in the background, just doing their own thing. There's bits where, like, a butterfly just flies off a thing, and the little character looks at watches it fly away while you're actually moving him.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's little details like that that just make you fall in love with this little character. I think Sackboy's a great creation. I think Sackboy is adorable and a great creation. But you know what? This little character from Unravel, I love as much as Sackboy.
Blasphemous.
It's not blasphemous. These two could be the best of friends.
It is blasphemous because, you see, one's made by EA and you can't like that. You're not allowed to, Rob.
I'm sorry, but Yarny, right? That's his name, Yarny. Him and Sackboy on an adventure, road trip together. You know, the plush version of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, if you will.
You see, you've went too far now. I've not went too far with Sackboy likes butt stuff. That's not too far at all. You crossed the bridge, Rob. You crossed the bridge and it's not coming back.
Look, it's EA. That's basically how they'd want to play it.
No, we're done. The geek show's over. Game over, man. Game over.
You insisted on ruining something wholesome, so I'm gonna go nuclear on this. anyway, Unravel. If you haven't played it, right, really seriously, play it. It's wonderful. The way it tells the story through the imagery and through the actions is great, and I wish more games would pick up on this sort of thing. So anyway, that's what we've been playing during the month of September. Let us know what you guys have been playing out there in the real world. The comments are below, so fill them with all your games from September. Let us know. We're always curious to see what other people are playing as well.
And we'll engage you in those comments as well, as long as those comments aren't horrible. But given that this is YouTube...
Yeah.
I made that noise was on brand for my game playing this month.
Well, you have been playing Night in the Woods, so.
Thank you for explaining the joke, Dad.
So anyway, thanks for listening, thanks for watching. We've been The Geek Show, and we'll see you next time.